Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Welcome to Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, we're turning over the microphone to my colleague, Wisconsin Public Radio's Mary Jo Wagner, who recently interviewed the candidates for State Assembly in two of the districts in our listening area. In the second half of our program, we'll hear from the candidates for the 69th Assembly District, incumbent Republican Scott Souter of Abbotsford, and his Democratic challenger Tim Swigum, the mayor of Owen. But first, we focus on the 87th Assembly District, where incumbent Republican Mary Williams of Medford is facing a challenge from Democrat Judy Reese of Park Falls. Williams has represented the 87th District since 2002. She is also a businesswoman who owns four local fast food restaurants. Judy Reese is a credit union employee who has also worked for a regional hospital and has served on the Park Falls City Council, Planning Commission, and Library Board. Wisconsin Public Radio's Mary Jo Wagner begins our segment with a question to Representative Mary Williams.
Tell us one thing, Representative Williams, about your district that we might not know. I know you mentioned there's a possibility that you would have a real large dairy coming into Taylor County.
Yes, there is a talk of that coming in. There was talk of a pig farm coming in, too. I'm not sure how far along that is, but there is... when I say small, now I heard there's a small dairy coming in. That's probably 500 cows. It's not a small, you know, 40 cow. There's probably a 500 cow dairy going on right now, but this other one is about 4,000 cows, which is pretty darn big.
And do you favor that?
I need to see what's going to happen to not just the industry part of it, but I have to look at the neighbors in the area. Because there are those who are very fearful that their water supply would be cut. And we have to make sure that, you know, it's pretty hard to stop these, though.
Would you go to bat to help them get going in Taylor County?
I would go to bat for the people who have been living there for all those years.
Uh-huh.
That they have their homes, some of them have little farms, some of them don't. They're living in the country, but they're very, very concerned. I know there's a place not far from there that has a wetlands area that people have even taken tours of because of the beauty of it and what they've done to it. And they're very concerned, too, that could dry up.
Uh-huh. Judy Reese,
I would definitely go to bat for the people that live there now.
You would stop an economic development of 4,000 cows and the jobs and the property tax?
If it would be detrimental to the people that are currently living there and the natural resources.
That wouldn't that be anti-growth?
If it's detrimental to the people and the natural resources, I think that's protecting your district.
How would you describe the needs for jobs in the 87th Assembly District?
Pretty severe.
And so there's a disjunct here, right?
Well, you have to be careful. You don't want to. You can't create or encourage jobs that are going to be detrimental to the area in the long run. So you have to balance that. Yes, we have to have jobs. Yes, we have to have a good climate for our businesses to come in. We have to have good paying jobs. But we need to protect our natural resources and we need to protect our people.
You are assuming that a large dairy would not be good for the environment?
Oh, I'm not saying that. Based on the question, if it was detrimental to the people, I would go to bat for the people.
You're in the northern part of the district. What are the job prospects up in that area?
Very limited. And that's actually part of the problem with the schools. You know, we've got declining enrollment, and the way the formula is right now, the schools in the north are suffering terribly, and no one's going to bat for them.
Well, there's a good chance with this economic downturn, it's going to be even worse for schools.
Absolutely.
So what would your solution be?
I think we need to look at the funding formula to start with and revise that.
In what way?
And make it more fair for all of the schools.
How would you do that?
Revise the formula?
But base it upon...
Well... Part of the problem when it was created in 1992 and implemented in 1993, it was intended to be a temporary fix. It looked at the levels that the schools were paying at that point, and it provided for increases. That was a portion of the formula.
That you would scrap the revenue limit?
Well, what happened is so many of the schools in the north were very frugal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it continues to be penalized over and over and over because they get less per child because they were frugal in 92.
Uh-huh.
So it has compounded, and the declining enrollment has made an impact.
Whose problem is it that you have declining enrollment? Whose problem is that?
I don't know that it's anyone's problem.
Representative Williams, she's pointing to the funding formula. We've talked about this for many years. The funding formula is hurting rural schools, those with declining enrollments.
Well, what happens is you create winners and losers when you start dealing with the funding formula. And Senator Decker and I were in Bruce a couple of months ago talking about, they're talking about consolidation. And the school board representatives who were there and the administrators said, well, we need more money. What are you going to do? And he said, just as I said, you create winners and losers when you do this. And he said years ago he was on a committee to look at the funding formula. And what they came up with was what we have is actually probably the best we're going to get. And when I spoke, I said ditto to him, but I was on the committee. I had asked for a committee along with a couple other legislators that we would have a committee to look at the funding formula. And so we did, and we had educators, and we had representatives, and we had superintendents. All kinds of people were there, and it was a really good good meetings that we had. It was two summers ago.
This is the governor's task force?
This was a separate committee.
Okay.
That was a assembly committee, and assembly and senate committee. And we had so much information there, and we talked, meeting after meeting after meeting about this. And during that time, I had proposed then that we get more money for transportation for the northern schools.
For rural.
The rural schools, yes. I'm thinking of my district, transportation, sparsity, declining enrollment, and we did get some money for that, which really helped out, especially the busing part of it.
Is that enough?
No.
Is it ever enough? But what happens is you still have this declining enrollment
mm-hmm.
fragment, and when you go in a school, and if you have a K-12 school with 150 kids,
right.
You got a real problem, and you just can't, you just can't fund that.
Uh-huh.
I know the Hawkins School built a brand new school. I was in there, a lovely school. They closed, I think, a year.
It's closed, right? The new building is sitting closed.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful building. It's sitting closed.
You're listening to a forum involving the candidates for the 87th Assembly District, incumbent Republican Mary Williams of Medford and Democrat Judy Reese of Park Falls, moderated by my colleague Mary Jo Wagner, Wisconsin Public Radio moderator from Eau Claire. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back with more after this.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, formerly Fiserv Health, providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We continue our debate with the candidates for the 87th Assembly District, incumbent Republican Mary Williams and Democrat Judy Reese. Let's pick up our coverage with Wisconsin Public Radio's Mary Jo Wagner.
Judy Reese, I read on your website that you say Representative Williams voted with a special interest when she decided to put the views of Wisconsin manufacturers and commerce above the views of the majority of us in northern Wisconsin. You write, where we are overwhelmingly in favor of keeping mercury poison out of our pristine lakes and rivers. The rule change you're talking about is proposed by the DNR that would require coal-fired plants to reduce their mercury emissions by 90%. That's 90% by 2015. What's wrong with the current 75% rule?
Well, our lakes already have too much mercury, and to continue to put more mercury out there, most of our fish, there's a limit of how many fish you can eat for health reasons because of the mercury. It's continuing to do damage the effects of the mercury on children. There has been some question whether there's a link to autism. There's a whole bunch of issues there that we need to reduce that.
So you think it's not a problem to require coal-fired plants to achieve this 90%?
Correct.
Representative Williams, what do you think?
Well, I think that the problem with the rule that we had before us was, for one thing, current law requires a state agency to provide a detailed economic impact statement when they're proposing a major rule change like this. And the DNR failed to do that. And so we wanted them to go back and do that, because right now I'm hearing from people, and I ask people around the district, if I voted on that, I would not have known how much it was going to cost you. Would that be okay with you? And everybody said to me, are you kidding? I don't know if I'm going to be able to pay my utility bills this winter. Why would you do such a thing? Now, we all want clean water, and we certainly don't want mercury in the water. But there really isn't any proof of how this is going to be cleaned up. You know, could clean it up by maybe 1%, maybe nothing, because there isn't current technology right now to tell us how it's going to affect the waters.
So the 75% rule that's in effect is just fine?
Well, a 70% reduction by 2015 currently is in effect, and that's a real good start. Mm-hmm. But the question becomes, how much more can we accomplish with the current technology, and how should it cost the people, how much should it cost the people of Wisconsin to achieve that?
It's going to be too expensive, Judy Reese, to do.
It might be. We don't know that.
The information that I had would be that it is not that much. The expense is not prohibitive. And to decide that we're not going to clean it up because it might be too expensive.
What if we don't have the technology to do it right now?
I think we do.
You're convinced that we do and we
yes.
need it. Should we have more nuclear power in the state?
That I would need more research on. You know, it's an area I simply don't know.
Mm-hmm. Representative Williams, the governor, I think, has said we should review this, right?
The governor has come out recently and said that he is more inclined to go along with nuclear power. And before he was not.
Are you?
But he is now. Yes, I am. It's a cleaner power. If we could have something else, yes. People talk about wind farms. Well, you have to be in the right area for those. Not every area of the state has the capacity of the wind that's needed for that.
Okay, let me go to Ladysmith, where Al is on the phone. Welcome to the West Side.
Thank you. The question I have is, what sort of legislation would you favor to provide property tax relief for homeowners?
And any specific guests you'd like to favor that to?
I think both should be able to answer that question.
Okay.
Judy Reese. Property tax relief, I would look at, by closing some of the corporate tax loopholes, we can offer the HOPE credit, which would be a homeowner's property exemption. It would reduce school taxes on houses, the first $60,000 of the home. The average savings is about a little over $500 per person. I think that's a fantastic start for property tax relief.
Mary Williams?
I don't know about that whole plan with that $60,000 home. There's a lot of homes that aren't even at that, so they'd be getting nothing. I mean, there would be nothing there, and there's a whole community I know of that would have nothing. But I did support a property tax freeze years ago and every year since, so we could look at that again.
And with this climate that we're talking about, this huge problem in the federal government, I mean, we have to change thinking in a drastic way, right?
Absolutely.
Well, right now,
back to the HOPE credit, it would reduce the first $60,000 of a home for school taxes. It is not all of your taxes.
Who's going to pay for schools?
The corporate tax loopholes. There's enough money by closing the Las Vegas loophole to fund that.
And what if businesses get in a big trouble right now where they have to lay off people?
We're just talking the huge businesses that are using a loophole for that is not available to all of the corporations by having the post office box in Las Vegas?
Representative Williams, corporations are not paying enough tax.
Well, I don't know what she's referring to. What does she mean when she's talking huge businesses? Because sometimes you talk about small business and it's a mom and pop type with two people in it. And so what is huge?
They're not utilizing the Las Vegas loophole.
So who does that, who's using that? Name some businesses that I can relate to.
And you're not familiar with the Las Vegas loophole?
Well, I know some. Well, you tell me. What do you know about it? I think we should move on, Mary Jo.
Well, no. I mean, this Las Vegas loophole always does come up. That's one of the ways that businesses can escape corporations. What do you think, Judy Reese? Is there a company that you could point to?
M&I Bank.
Okay.
They're one that utilizes that.
Many banks use that. Should we stop the banks from doing that, Representative Williams?
But not all banks utilize that. Mm-hmm. And even some of the larger banks don't utilize that. So they're paying their fair share in Wisconsin. And so some of the banks that are operating in Wisconsin are not paying their fair share.
Representative Williams, you have a comment?
Well, yeah, I do. I think that she's probably right about some of those that are doing that. But now there's another consideration on that. Do we want to chase businesses out of Wisconsin? Do we want to chase jobs away if we start changing the rules too much?
Mary Williams, we have use value. The property taxes that agriculture pays is based upon use of the land rather than the way everyone else is assessed based upon market value. Do you think that is still fair if we run into some real economic times? Is it going to be fair to continue evaluating agriculture the way we are?
Well, that's a tough one, Mary Jo, because I appreciate all the farm families that we have. And, you know, for many, many years, they've suffered trying to make a go of raising our food. And that's what they're doing. They are raising our food for us. And I think that it would be pretty hard-pressed to take taxes away, or, you know, take the tax breaks away from them.
I don't think we should increase the taxes for the farmers. I think the agricultural land value, but I also think we need to look at the loopholes in that also. And there's people that are not technically farming that are taking advantage of some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to look at those and say, is that appropriate? Is that what it's intended for? And if not, we need to close some of those loopholes.
Have we looked at that, Mary Williams?
When she says loopholes, it sounds like such a dirty word. I'd need specifics on that.
Well,
there are some farmers that are using these and they're not right. If they're not, then somebody should report that.
Now, one of the other areas.
No, you know what? I don't think loopholes is a dirty word. I think that's an area that we need to ensure we're not overdoing what the benefit was intended for. If I own a 40 and I want to rent that out so that my neighbor can make hay on it, I can claim it as agricultural land. I'm not the farmer, and I'm not so sure that that's the best use of the intent of the law.
Mm-hmm. The other area that has affected some of the local municipalities is a law I know, Representative Williams, that you have opposed, and that is the Smart Growth Law, the long-range comprehensive planning law that says all municipalities, 1,923 of them, must have in place. Is now the time to change that? Many of them are already done. There's like 1,500 of them that are doing something.
Well, I did this because of my constituents. There is a big share of my constituency that did not want to have anything to do with smart growth. So what I came up with is a bill, the AB 718, that would delay it till 2015. But I had to do a compromise on 3 years. Or the Towns Association wouldn't have been in favor of it either. And it passed overwhelmingly in the Assembly, 77-20. So it was really well received there, but the Senate didn't act on it.
Uh-huh. Judy Reese, would you change the smart growth law or the planning law?
Change it, no.
Leave it the way it is. Require it, keep it in place, the 2010 rule.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Healthcare. Judy Reese, your healthcare option. Are we going to see Healthy Wisconsin or pieces of it come back this session?
I hope so. I hope that's something that we will evaluate.
You liked it.
I like the... In general, I think it needs a little bit of work. I think that we need to definitely do something to provide health care for our constituents.
And you think we'll be able to afford it?
I think so. The figures have shown by doing it, it will pay for itself. It will not be a state-funded.
Representative Williams, what do you think the chance of Healthy Wisconsin coming back now?
Not as it sits, not as it was. We had 51 questions about it, and we haven't gotten an answer for one of them yet. So I don't think as it was presented, it will not come forward. And as far as the government running a program, my goodness, look what the government just did.
Do you think you will ever support the statewide smoking ban, Representative Williams?
The smoking ban?
Yes.
I don't know. I was just reading some more information on smoking bans. And there was a couple of fellows who did a real extensive study on this. I think it was from 1960 to 1998. It was the longest running and highest quality secondhand smoke study done, and they said there's no link between secondhand smoke and lung cancer or heart disease.
Uh-huh. Will you support it, Judy Reese?
I would seriously consider it, yes.
Probably, yes. Yes. Yes, you will. Mary Williams, you said no then, right?
No, I'm not sure. Not sure about it. Because I just got this new information, and I thought, wow, that's, you know, with these guys who had studied it, that's interesting.
All right. Your parting thought, Representative Williams.
My parting thoughts? We need to do a lot of work here, and I'm focusing on the economics. I was real happy to be a part of getting that $5 million for the Park Falls paper mill put in the budget, and Judy's husband works there, so I'm sure she's happy that it's running.
All right. Judy Reese, your parting thought.
I will work hard, and I bring to the table some common sense, some good abilities, some connection with the middle-class folks.
The candidates for the 87th Assembly District, incumbent Republican Mary Williams and Democrat Judy Reese, will be back with the 69th Assembly District and Mary Jo Wagner right after this. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin as we continue our look at two of the hotly contested state assembly races in our listening area. In the last half hour, we listened to the candidates in the 87th District, incumbent Republican Mary Williams of Medford and her Democratic challenger Judy Reese of Park Falls. In this segment, we turn our attention to the 69th Assembly District, where incumbent Republican Scott Suter of Abbotsford faces a repeat challenge from Democrat Tim Swiggum, the mayor of Owen. We're turning the microphone over today to my colleague from Eau Claire, Wisconsin Public Radio's Mary Jo Wagner, who poses the first question to Representative Scott Suter on the subject of last session's budget impasse in the Assembly.
Representative Suter, I know that the governor had to come in with the last budget go-around, overrode the legislature. He had to make the $270 million in cuts in May, obviously because of the poor economy and decreased sales. It seemed like that was the governor running, doing what the legislature should have done.
Well, look, the last go-around, the last two budgets, both the state budget and the budget repair bill, I believe we worked in a very bipartisan fashion with both the Senate Majority Leader and the governor. Now, it took a little while, no doubt about it.
But you didn't cover the deficit. The governor had to come in and do more cuts.
If you look at the assembly budget that we put forward, we had a no-tax increase budget that was balanced. You have to have a balanced budget in this state. Yes, there was a disagreement on how you balance it. But in the end, the budget that we passed, the compromise budget we passed, was balanced. The budget repair bill was also balanced. The governor didn't like a few things, granted, and he rebalanced it through his innovative vetoes, which is his right. But our budget was balanced. Our budget that we presented both in the assembly and the final budget,
but
they were balanced.
But it only cut $69 million. Am I wrong on that? And there was a $652 million deficit.
No, we took a combination of things, both lapses from departments, which uh-huh. meaning money that was uncaptured or being unused. We utilized that. We did use some money from the Rainy Day Fund. We used a combination of sources. So direct monies, no, you're correct in that respect. But the monies that we utilized, whether it was pushing off projects or taking future revenues or taking monies from that were in pots already, yes, we did balance it.
I'm trying to get at is it was sort of like a – The best thing to say is, well, you fix it. You know, I don't want to stand up for these cuts. You fix it.
I think that's mischaracterizing what happened. Now, the governor did reauthorize some things, and he did make some cuts and canceled out some cuts through his vetoes, yes. But to say that we didn't balance the budget and we passed the buck, it's simply not the case.
Okay, Tim Swigum?
Well, to claim that the budget process was anything bipartisan, I think, is a big stretch, because if anybody followed that situation, it was the most partisan thing that ever happened in Wisconsin. I think that for the budget to be 6 months late, and if they were really working truly bipartisan, of course they had to pass it with a bipartisan vote, so that makes it bipartisan, but it was a very partisan display of how the Republican Assembly was holding things up.
Would you have voted against some of the Democratic proposals?
That's a good question. I wasn't going through it line by line. If I was down there, I would not vote with the Democrat Party 98%.
Which issues would you not support that they have done, even if it's not a budget issue?
Well, you caught me off guard a little there.
Well, I'm just wondering, when we deal with these tough issues of we always say we want to cut taxes, we want this program or that program, and then when it comes down to the dollars, it's like then it's a different issue.
Well, what needs to stop is to say that we need to quit promising that we're not going to raise any tax, any tax that ever comes up, and then not be responsible and cover the necessities that we need.
Would you raise alcohol taxes?
I would consider that, since it's been 40 years since we've raised an alcohol tax.
Cigarette taxes, should it go up more?
They just did that last year. Mr. Souter voted for that after signing his no tax pledge.
And gas taxes, should we raise?
I think it was somewhat of a mistake to take away the indexing of it, because now they're shortening the transportation budget.
Corporate taxes?
Corporate taxes. I think that we need to close some of the loopholes, the Las Vegas loophole corporations that are using Wisconsin to make money, but their corporate headquarters are out of state and they don't pay taxes here. I don't think that's fair.
Yes, we should raise corporate taxes.
We should close loopholes.
Uh-huh. Representative Souter, alcohol taxes, that keeps getting brought up. We haven't raised them for a long time, so they should kind of pay their fair share.
Absolutely not. Not a chance. It will not happen on my watch. My opponent will consider it. There is no way I'm going to be taxing fish fries in this state. This is not the time, when we have a bad economy, to be punishing people for going out and being able to socialize or going to a fish fry. So there's a serious difference on taxes. I guess this is the striking difference tonight. I'm not going to tax fish fries, and my opponent will.
Fish fries.
Yeah, I'm going to tax a fish fry. See how this goes.
How would
I said
tax
I would consider it, because 40 years we haven't raised that.
And I said I won't.
But we just raised the cigarette taxes under Souter's watch. He raised the cigarette tax.
Did
he
you
raised,
disagree with that?
I didn't disagree with that, but I didn't promise the people that I would not vote for that.
Okay, well, you were criticized, right, for Americans for Tax Reform, because you did vote for that tax increase.
He signed a pledge.
Yes, in 2004, Tim. Look, the cigarette tax, I didn't agree with it. I fought all the way along. If I was in control of the legislature, which I'm not, because there's 132 of us, we wouldn't have had a cigarette tax. But your governor and the state Senate Democrats wanted a cigarette tax in the worst way. We didn't give them everything they wanted, but in the end, you had to have a compromise. And I voted for the compromise, yes. Did I like it? No. But I fought that cigarette tax the whole way around. And what I said last campaign was, I am going to fight this. You said you were for it. You were for it 100%. I said, no, I'm going to fight it.
What about corporate taxes?
I said I was for it if it went to health care, but there was no part of that. It's
corporate
just
tax, before
problem.
We go to news, Representative Souter.
Look, I'm not. My goal has been not to raise taxes in this state. I didn't say, and I've never said, no taxes anytime. But I said what we should do, the last thing we should do in this state, the last thing we should do is look at taxes. My opponent thinks the first thing we should do is look at taxes. I say this should
He's
be the last
words
thing,
in my mouth,
and we
I
should
think.
Find
well, it's
where,
a fairness issue from what I'm understanding on the corporate. It's a fairness issue. Everybody should pay their fair share.
Well, if you start taxing corporations, now it depends on how you determine what corporation means, but look, who's going to end up paying that? Do you think the corporations are going to end up paying that? No, it's the consumers that are going to end up being hit in the wallet again. And what I'm saying is, look, instead of going out and trying to find boogeymen like big corporations, why don't we start looking at state government and cutting some programs that don't make sense?
What about
That's
this?
Where we should start first.
As long as we continue down this path, though, it falls on the property taxpayers to foot that bill.
Short answer on the seatbelt enforcement. I'm understanding there's $15 million out there of federal money if we allow the state to ticket people for seatbelt. Representative Souter, would you take that $15
million? Absolutely not. It's legislative blackmail of the worst kind, and there's no way I'm going to let Washington
do this. No way. Tim Swiggum, would you?
I would have to look into that.
It would be money that would come back into the state if we'd enforce the seatbelt law.
As far as I know, they enforce the seatbelt law now.
Well, they can only stop. It's a secondary stop. They can't just see through the window that you're not wearing a seatbelt and stop you and fine you.
So by changing that law, we could get $15 million.
Isn't there a chance that money is available?
Oh, sure, there's a chance. And I don't believe anything Washington says these days when it comes to money.
So you would turn down the money.
I would turn down the money because I think this is legislative blackmail.
You're listening to the candidates for the 69th Assembly District, incumbent Republican Scott Souter and Democrat Tim Swiggum. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
We continue our look at the candidates for the 69th Assembly District, incumbent Republican Scott Souter and Democrat Tim Swiggum. Wisconsin Public Radio's Mary Jo Wagner asks the candidates if first offense drunk driving should be a felony in Wisconsin, as it is in many states. Scott Souter is the first to respond.
First-time offenders, to make that such a severe felony, I'm not sure that the punishment fits the crime, for one, and I'm not sure that what the problem is repeat offenders. The problem out there right now when it comes to drunk driving is repeat offenders. It's not the first time drunk offender that makes a mistake. And there are punishments that we need to keep in place for those first time offenders. But unfortunately, it's the repeat offenders that are causing the problems.
Tim Swiggum, first time drunk driving a felony. Right now, it's a traffic.
Well, from what I've learned is that we're the only state in the country that it is not a felony. I'm not supporting it because I know that people can make mistakes. If someone had a very extremely high BAC, I think that it should be considered. But if they're just a little over the .08 and they get busted and they made a little mistake, I don't see putting a mark on their
okay.
whole life.
Tim Swiggum, do you support a statewide smoking ban?
I support the ban because it's wanted by the public. And I do believe it needs to be a level playing field. I know that the tavern leagues are against it, and it is a big issue. But I have also heard from a lot of people that enjoy going into a place that has better air quality. And
statewide, including taverns, you would make it?
Yes. I don't, because having owned a cafe as well, I know that people in the mornings and for lunch, they smoke in the cafes and the restaurants, and it would be unfair to them to... They would lose their business to the taverns that serve a burger at lunch.
Oh, okay. A statewide ban. Representative Souter?
I will support a compromise that exempts taverns and small businesses and like small businesses. But no, I won't support an all-out, one-size-fits-all state smoking ban that doesn't have a compromise. We have offered a compromise, both Democrats and Republicans, and the groups that want a all-and-out flat-out statewide smoking ban, period, have refused it. So until we get to that compromise, I won't support it, because in rural areas, I believe it would decimate small businesses that depend. This is their livelihood. This is their business.
Their livelihood is based on smoking?
No, the livelihood is based on their customers. Some of their customers do smoke. And my opinion is, look, this is their place of business. They should be able to choose what their place of business looks like and what their place of business, who they serve, and what happens inside, as long as it's legal. And look, smoking's legal. I don't smoke. I think it's a disgusting habit. But these are private businesses, and if we do a statewide smoking ban for Madison, it's going to decimate many of those small businesses in rural areas. I'm not going to let that happen.
This study that came out from the UW-Madison Comprehensive Care Center, Comprehensive Research Center, they came up to 58 establishments in one of your counties, Clark County. They also came to Burnett, Polk, Eau Claire, La Crosse, Pierce, Chippewa, and Russ counties. 58 establishments. They didn't do this randomly. They picked the popular ones to come to test the air. And three-fourths of them were above the hazardous level. Department of Natural Resources setting 40 micrograms of small particulates in the air. They found anywhere from 100 to 1,400 micrograms in these establishments. Now, here's one of them that's in your area. One of them had 100 micrograms, which is considered unhealthy. One of them had 562, twice the hazardous level.
Having been in the restaurant business and in the restaurant banquet hall bar business, I understand where they're coming from, that businesses should have this choice. But the people overwhelmingly want this. If we put this up to a statewide referendum, which was my first suggestion, it would pass overwhelmingly. And that is why I've decided to support it, because I believe that it would pass by 70 or 80% like it has in most communities.
I'd bet if you put it in a referendum in Clark County, it would fail miserably. So I'm going to stick with our people, not the people of Madison and Milwaukee that want it.
Should we then also pay for health care costs for someone who has a smoking-related illness?
Well, the fact is, we do now. Look, I have always submitted that if you don't like smoking, and smoking is a disgusting habit. But look, then go to the federal government and get it banned. The fact is, it's legal. And the fact is, there are people who smoke who go to many bars. That's part of the clientele of many of these bars and restaurants. That's just a fact of life. And if you force them out, they're either going to smoke outside or smoke at home. You're not solving the problem. You're not stopping them from smoking. You're just forcing them outside or forcing them at home. And some of them may have children at home. And it is. It's a personal choice, and it's a business choice, and the government should keep their butts out of the discussion.
to me, I think it's more of a pander to a special interest,
right,
because the public speaks out in favor of it more
often.
One
of the issues that's just come up in the last week is the Supreme Court funding, the public financing for campaigns. There's always been a conversation about this. Tim Swigum, do you think campaigns for Supreme Court need to be changed?
I lean that way. I believe that the court should not be bought by the WMC or other interest groups. And I think that it should be
public financing?
Public financing for the judicial ones. And I also I want to look into public financing for campaigns to see if that would work, because special interests are running the show. The insurance companies, and if you look at Mr. Souter's donations, it's a lot from the insurance companies. And why does he vote against autistic children in favor of insurance companies? Why is he so against the Healthy Wisconsin plan? I believe it's because he gets a lot of money from the insurance companies. And on the smoking ban, the Tavern League is a very big supporter of his.
Let him answer, Representative Souter.
Look, as far as your question with regard to Supreme Court races, no, I don't think anybody wants the Greater Wisconsin Committee or the Teachers Union or anyone else running the show. And they poured millions of dollars in the last Supreme Court race.
But if
you're going to do that, if you're going to do public financing of Supreme Court races, then we better make absolutely certain that you regulate issue advocacy to make sure that the big dogs out there, the 800-pound gorillas, aren't completely taking over, because that's the other component. You can't just simply throw state money at it and leave out the other component. There has to be both of them have to be included. But to simply say taxpayers are going to pay for it is the wrong approach. The real problem are these groups that come in and simply take over campaigns and skew the entire public's view of any particular campaign.
We should regulate the issue ads.
I think if we can, and I think if there's a way to do it that doesn't impose on free speech, and that really is the big question, yeah, I think we should take a look at that. But you have to combine the two components.
Are there brochures in your race now coming into the district?
I'm not aware of any that
they're
are
not
from outside interest.
Okay. But they'll come into the Chippewa Valley. And
yes,
and
they are right
they
now.
Have
yes.
Already yeah.
I'm
so.
Wondering whether... there should be a ban on fundraising during budget negotiations.
I absolutely think there should be, because especially when the budget process takes 9 months, seven to nine months. And
it's a lot of time without any money.
Well, I think that the fundraising should be a secondary part. We're paying our legislators to be down there $47,000 a year.
Is that a suit or a ban?
Well, the only way you can do that is if it's equal and across the board. You'd have to do it for the governor. You'd have to do it for both parties. And sure, we can take a look at that. That's something that I think both Democrats and Republicans have initiated. But it has to be for both parties, and it has to be for the governor, and it has to be for the Senate and the Assembly. You can't just start saying, well, you know, these legislators can and these elected officials can't. That wouldn't be fair.
Well, I absolutely agree with that, and we need to keep – I think we should keep the special interest monies out of the campaigns, because they are actually costing us more money from all the votes that they're buying and the money that is getting spent.
Name one vote that was bought.
Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, which Representative Souter has 100% ranking with, you know, so he's voting with business where I think we need to vote for the people.
Mm-hmm. So I voted with small businesses, and you're saying my vote has been purchased
those
somehow?
Are mostly large
Name one vote, Tim. Name one vote.
I got the list in the car.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Well, the insurance one over autistic children.
Yeah, when was that vote, Tim?
This last set.
That was a polling motion, Tim. That wasn't a vote on the floor, and you think you know that.
And where do you stand on funding for the autism?
The autism, look, it's Republicans that saved autism in this state when the governor wanted to cut it. We put millions and millions more into autism. We are willing to help solve the autism waiting list, and it would cost about $12.3 million. I'm willing to find that money to get rid of that waiting list. But Tim wants to just simply go and say, insurance companies, you're going to pay for it, meaning their customers, meaning policyholders, are certainly going to foot the bill. We can do this for less by investing state money to help these autistic kids, and it's Republicans that saved the program from your governor who wanted to cut it. So let's talk about the issue rather than the politics.
Well, I think that the insurance companies, why are we opposed to them covering that, and why should the state pay for it when you argue against the state paying for it to begin with?
No.
For any medicine.
I'm saying it's cheaper to have the state pay for it than to mandate it. And by mandating, you're making every policyholder in this state pay for it. It's cheaper to have the state pay for it, Tim.
And so we're all paying for it instead of the people with those policies.
I'm concerned. A lot of people are concerned about how we're going to get through the election with some voting problems. I'm wondering, the lawsuit is in place from the Attorney General. I'm wondering, Tim Swigum, should residents be dropped from voter rolls and forced to cast provisional ballots if their name doesn't come up correctly on the databases?
Well, if we would have started this process several months ago instead of 2 months before the election and give our clerks time to react
to this. Answer is no?
I think for this election, it's too close to the election to require that.
What do you think, Representative Souter?
The integrity of the ballot box is far too important to not explore this. And yes, the Government Accountability Board should have had this done way back in January. They chose not to. The Attorney General is simply enforcing the law, and I would argue we should go one step further and have people come in with identification so we know who they are and where they're from, so people aren't double voting. We don't have felons voting. We don't have the craziness that's going on in some other states. We can't allow Wisconsin to become Florida.
Mm-hmm. I think that there might be some areas that have problem, but most of us, I believe we need to put that trust in our local elections officials.
Well, let me get some final thoughts. Representative Souter, your final thoughts.
My final thoughts are, look, this election, I think, is a referendum in this race on the incumbent. And I think if you look at my record, you look at the dental clinic that we're building, if you look at the bipartisan successes we've had working together with Senator Kreitlow and myself and Senator Decker and what we've done in terms of making sure our roads are still on track and health care access is improved, and doing what we can to make sure that we bring jobs to our area. Yeah, I'm running on my record of bipartisan accomplishment, and I'll leave it at that.
All right, Tim Swigum.
Well, I have a record, too, of 50% growth in my community. We've raised our tax base by over $12 million and over 100 jobs. Now, that's just in the city of Owen and the village of Withy. But I have brought this to the table, too, and I think that job creation is number one, and we need more of that. I have a working relationship with all communities in the Clark County and outside the district, or outside Clark County in the district now as well.
And do you have a website?
SwiggumForAssembly.com.
Scott Suter, you're
www.votesuter.com.
And that concludes today's edition of Route 51 and our look at the candidates for State Assembly in the 69th District. Incumbent Republican Scott Suter of Abbotsford and his challenger, Democrat Tim Swiggum, the mayor of Owen. And in the first half of our program, the candidates for State Assembly in the 87th District. Incumbent Republican Mary Williams and her challenger, Democrat Judy Reese of Park Falls. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. A big thanks to my colleague Mary Jo Wagner of Wisconsin Public Radio in Eau Claire, who conducted the forums with both sets of candidates earlier this month. Thanks also to our executive producer Rick Ryer, our on-air producer Kelson Quisler. Thanks as always to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next Thursday, Route 51 has a post-election wrap-up, a reporter's roundtable looking at the results and the implications of this coming Tuesday's national, state, and local elections. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 5 on the Ideas Network stations, WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau and 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, 90.3 FM Park Falls, and WHRM 90.9 FM High Definition Channel 2. Thanks again for riding with us today. Don't forget to vote on Tuesday. And until next week, we are heading out of town.